Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is July the 11th, 2019, and today we're going to be talking about getting in the zone for peak performance more consistently. A lot of people have a zone experience or feel like they've maybe achieved that once in their lives or are still chasing, you know, getting in the zone. But so we want to help clients, help our athletes and business people to be able to get in that sense of flow and zone, you know, more consistently. And so I want to talk about, you know, sort of a zone toolbox to mentally prepare your clients for, you know, their top level events. And if you can be thinking of your own experiences too, how you got in the zone if you did a peak performance in some way, and then, or did it just happen by accident, or did you do certain things, do you have a certain routine, and then and think about your clients too, and can have you share things that you've done with them to help them get into a flow and into a peak performance state more consistently. And then, you know, we'll talk about different techniques for that, for dealing with different scenarios and how to, different strategies, what to do, you know, further out from the competition and then closer in a few months before, a few days before, weeks before kind of thing. And then, you know, some resilience training, what to do, you know, what when there's lots of ups and downs and so many things to deal with when sometimes we're in a peak performance state and then go out of it because of, you know, losing a point and then have to get back in. So it's not always a consistent state to be in. And how to, you know, deal with different athlete scenarios, kind of special issues. And so, yeah, I wanted to deal with that first, and first just check in with you and see what you're doing with your clients or anything you wanted to share, and about, you know, how, if you've had a peak experience or just generally what you're doing with your clients now and any successes that you've had. And then, Michelle, I'll answer your questions too. As we get into it here, topic, I'll answer your questions that you emailed me too. That sounds great. Yeah. So, any Michelle or Matt, do you want to share just what you've any updates about who you're working with now?
I guess I can start real quick. This is Matt again.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I definitely have a little bit of a story here, but we. We'll sum it up with I've got an athlete who had some really good performances lately, and she just talked to me last night. It was a really great talk about learning to flip or switch and having two different type of modes, you know. So she's a little bit more zen, if you will, and she flips that switch off, and she's learned to keep herself a lot more calm and carry on kind of thing, and not take things too seriously, not sort of operate at such sort of a higher nervous system, you know, kind of demand, so she can keep her body a little bit more relaxed and her mind more relaxed all the time. And of course, this has been coming from the exercises that you have in your program that I've had her doing. So this is Lexi, who I sent you, Dr. Cotter, a case study on. And now she's... Yeah, so now she's just learning to kind of save that for when she really needs it. And when she flips that switch on, she's kind of has this little analogy of she turns herself into a machine, and it's time to go. And it's something that works for her, but she basically almost like thinking of herself as a machine in those scenarios where now, okay, it's time to go. I can and I will. And there's really no second guessing herself. It's my body's a machine. I've trained it. I've operated it. I've skilled it. It's a finely tuned machine. And now I'm just going to do what I've trained it to do. And because almost like in a car where you have that booster button you can push when she flips that switch on, now she's got that high octane that she's going to tap into. And she said that her performances, especially in the last couple weeks, she's been able to really get in some great performances that way. So the main key or takeaway here is that she was a little bit more highly stressed before. She had come back from a knee injury from track from last season. She's a Division I 10,000-meter runner. And we had to do a lot of rehab, and I do, you know, physiotherapy. So we did a lot of rehab. She wasn't able to get in as much volume, and she was getting stressed about that. She was kind of overthinking what would happen when she's not getting in 60, 70, 80 miles a week. And so we dealt with that a lot, but she's got, I think, more confidence now than ever, and it's only been about 2 months since her injury, and she has zero pain. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that she's not focused on her knee, but she's at zero pain, and she's just crushing her performances right now, just flipping that switch on when she needs to, but realizing that most of the time it's about having that switch off. So that's my example.
Well, thank you. Yeah, was that triathlons or which sport?
No, she's a 10,000-meter runner. Well, cross country. She's a Division I runner. She's getting ready for 8,000 meters in cross country, 6 to 8,000 meters. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Matt. So, yeah, learning to flip the switch is a great way to think of it, and thinking of your body as a machine, like a car, and saying, I've got that high octane fuel in my body, and then you know, that reassurance that you're doing everything and have done everything to prepare is great. So that's great, yeah. And Michelle, are you there too? I know you had, and you could share what you're doing with clients, and maybe ask your question too. That first one about the looking at other statistics, if you want.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Dr. Joanne. Yeah, I'm working. So right now, my main clients are the BC golf team, and the coach is—he's a real taskmaster, and he's not a man of many words, but he really has very high expectations of how I show up, and you know, the results and so on. So he's really kept me on my toes. So it's good. He never gives me much feedback, though, after I do doesn't give me any feedback when I do a session with his athletes. And, you know, I walk away going, I wonder, you know, I think that was good, but I'm not quite sure. And anyway, he sent me a nice email the other day just telling me he appreciated what I was doing and he was noticing the difference in his players. So that was nice. And then I'm working with a lot of tennis players right now. That's a big one. And then, you know, someone asked me last week, they said, do you find what you do stressful? And I said, I don't find it stressful. Where I feel my stress going up is when one of my athletes is upset or sad or, you know, just a little bit derailed. And I find that stressful because I want to be able to help them so badly, you know, overcome whatever is challenging them. And, you know, the other day I was on the phone with this one provincial-level athlete in tennis, and she was in tears, and, you know, it was heartbreaking. And her mom came on the call, and, you know, was supposed to be a 30-minute call ended up being a two-hour call. And I got off the phone just going, God, did I do a good enough job, you know? And so there's a little bit of that, you know, just wanting it to always work. But she did really well in her selection series the next day. Her mom said she played amazing, and so it worked. So, you know, I
are you there? Oh, I think, we lost Michelle for a moment, but I hope you can call back in and, we can hear the rest of your story. Are you, Matt, are you still there? Hello?
Yeah, thanks. Sorry. I have it on mute because I'm taking my daughter to martial arts, but I am listening, yes.
Oh, okay. I just wanted, because I heard this noise, and I wondered if the whole call got dropped. But yeah, that's because you're there. And
yeah.
Michelle, I think she says sometimes, yeah, she's up in Canada, but sometimes the call gets dropped. So hopefully she'll come back on here. Oh, there. That's her.
I think I heard her.
Yeah, Michelle, are you back?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
we're getting a storm here where I am. So.
Oh.
Know, I always have technical problems on our calls, and this might even be worse today. So,
So
that's kind of where I'm at. It's a little bit of a roller coaster ride. I think I'm starting to get better athletes as I'm, you know, progressing in what I'm doing, and the stakes are getting higher, and I just want, I want success for them, really. And so, that was a long story.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks for your story. And sounds like you went the extra mile of turning a half-hour call into a two-hour call, which sometimes, you know, we wonder, oh, is this too much? But, you know, sometimes, going the extra mile really makes a difference if there's a crisis going on or if something big is happening. And it sounds like she's played really well the next day, that what you did really made a difference. So that's really good. And I'm glad that you could really give help there, and then it's good. It's important for us to think about getting in our zone as coaches before working with an athlete, as well as getting the athletes into a zone. So we're really talking about kind of two levels here, And so you can think about it two different ways. So that's great. So let me introduce start talking about the topic here. And then Michelle, I want to get to your question shortly, too, about this athletes comparing themselves, because that's the thing that could keep you away from being in the zone. The zone, we all know, is kind of your winning mindset. So, yeah, think of this on two levels, yourself as a coach, how do you get in the zone, and then how do you get your athletes or business clients also. I know some people are working with business in the zone, too. So it's really a winning mindset that we want when you're in your ideal mood and you have the right intensity and your mind is focused on how you play, how to play well, and how to in your game plan, and you know you're using your thoughts to help you rather than to all that anxiety, and you want your confidence to be high, and you want that to feel mentally and physically prepared to compete and overcome any obstacles that you're going to face. Like, for instance, with myself, before I see a client, especially the first session, I know to get myself in the zone, I'll go for a walk, maybe 10 minutes or so, a brisk walk, and I'll take some deep breaths and just clear my mind, and then I kind of visualize how I'd like it to go. Maybe I haven't even seen the person yet, but kind of visualize a good communication, good synergy there, and visualize them attending well to what I'm saying, and that I'm really listening, that I have kind of like antenna, not just ears, but super ears. So, you can listen on many levels, the words and all of the, get all their communication signals from all the different senses and tone, and then really be able to respond well. And so, take in some deep breaths and then assess energy level, just feeling like, oh, am I too hyped up? Then in that case, I want to take some deep breaths and just kind of, move my arms around circles and slow down a little bit. Or am I too low energy and I need to psych myself up if I'm feeling tired, if it's mid-afternoon or something, and so I need to, in that case, I'll, go for a quick walk or be in the office and do a few exercises, jump up and down, just like athletes do. It's really good to to be able to move around consistently and just do something to get my heart rate up. And so it's good to find out where you are on the kind of energy arousal level so that you can bring yourself to the right place. So and those are things, you know, and then always drinking water, going to the restroom, making sure to take care of all the bodily things beforehand. And so that's a good way to, and then a smile. I think that's really important for us and for our athletes to do, to smile. If they're coming to the door, before I open the door, so they, I'm already seeing a smile. Oh, I think someone's phone's ringing. So you can, you know, really respond well to them when you're smiling. It's just people see that. Oh, maybe can you mute your phone if someone else has a call there? That's good. So we can have a good recording. Yeah. So thank you. So that's part of it. And then I want to ask first, why is being in the zone important? You know, when you're consistently in the zone or well mentally prepared, you know, you can perform consistently at your best, much more reliably, and so respond to whatever is happening. So you're at your, you're in your best mood, you're composed, and you don't want unwanted emotions to get in the way of playing well, and still you can avoid making unnecessary errors. When we're really anxious, we make those too many errors. You're at really optimum confidence level, so you can perform really, overcome tough situations and be able to bounce back, have that resilience to quickly come back from mistakes. So just thinking about those things that you want to do helps you to be more prepared. You want to really focus on the game or the race, the information that you and things that you need to do right at that moment, focusing on the task at hand, and you want to really execute your, just staying in the game and ignoring distractions, and you want to have the right kind of intensity and energy level so you really stay motivated. So kind of right in between, not too hyped up, not too calm, but right in the middle where you, and each person is different with that energy level that they need, so that you can stay motivated, energized when things don't go your way, and that you'll be really ready to fight for every point or every person that you're working with, that you're competing against, and be really resilient under pressure. So those are some of the things why being in the zone is important. And in fact, I just wanted to relate, of course, we know that U.S. women's soccer team just won the world championships and the World Cup soccer, and they were definitely in the zone, even with all kinds of pressure. And, they're in the middle of a lawsuit for trying to get higher pay and all kinds of things going on around that. And rather than having that be a distraction, they were using all of those things to help them. They realized we need to win this game to be able to win our fight to get higher pay to equal the men. Their pay is something like one-third of what the men, U.S. soccer players, are getting, even though the men haven't performed nearly as well, haven't won, haven't done as, haven't even got up in the rankings, whereas the women have won, you know, five times now the World Cup. So they had this going on as well, and yet they were able to really focus and just take it all the way to the top. Also, I wanted to mention one example within our group here is one of our people that just became a certified coach, Paul. Hewitt he's in England, and in addition to being a performing edge coach, certified now, he is at his peak performance as an athlete, and he does, he just relayed to me, he does freestyle jet skiing, and he competed in the European Championships, and he actually won all five categories in his European Championships. I don't know if he's... it would be great for him to relay his experience about that on this call, if he can come on the call. He said he would, if he could perhaps come on later or on the next call, and just to talk about that a little bit. But, yeah, he was able to win the championships this last week, and then just a few days ago in Belgium, and it actually win all five categories and also win the best trick competition. So, and he was using, a lot of the performing edge techniques that we talk about here for his own competition. So I just want to acknowledge Paul. Congratulations, Paul, for that great performance and for getting in the zone, using the performing edge techniques here to have your best own performance as an athlete and be able to, to perform your best when it counts the most. And he's still going ahead and doing more competitions this summer as well. So, it's really interesting where you do lots of tricks on the jet ski. So those are some examples of people, teams, and individuals getting into the zone. So now I want to talk just a little bit about how to get in the zone. And it's important to identify your kind of performing edge mindset, and I talk about that in the book, in the Your Performing Edge book as well, in chapter 2 there. And I think everybody has that different energy level and mindset that's optimum for them, their zone. So you want to begin with your athletes to think about when you play your best, what mood or emotions you're in. And so that's when exercise you could do with your athletes is have them do a journaling exercise, write down the what they experience when they're playing their best. And that's actually one of the exercises I have you do in our performing and certification course too. For example, some athletes want to be calm and relaxed, and others need to be excited and have high energy, and it depends on your sport as well. If you're doing a marathon, of course, you're probably going to start out excited and then get become calm and get into the zone and sort of a more relaxed energy during the race, whereas somebody who's, let's say, doing martial arts has to be constantly aware of the moves that the other person is making right there, and so you can't be too relaxed. You need to be focused on what that other person is doing. If it's tennis, I know, Michelle, you said you're working with tennis players, has to be focused on what that other, what your competition is, the balls that they're hitting to you all the time, and so your energy level goes up and down, and then during the break, so you can relax a little bit. So you can have your athletes kind of write down their ideal emotion and make it a kind of energy level 1 to 10, 10 being the highest energy and 1 being the lowest. So you can have them identify where they need to be for having the best competition. And so to get into the zone before you compete, you want to, of course, use a pre-game routine or pre-race routine that you work out with your athletes. And if you have a really good pre-game routine, then you'll be ready to perform your best from the beginning. Avoid those kind of slow starts. So that's something that you want to have your athletes work on. Oh, I say pre-game, or it could be pre-race, depends on what the event is, but either one is game routine. I'm referring to all different sports. And so, did someone else just join us too?
Miss G. Dixon's here.
Oh, hi, Missy. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
How are you? Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so we're talking about getting into the zone and a pre-game routine and how important that is, and you want to have some steps that you follow, have your athletes follow each time to get into that zone more consistently. And so it's to be able to be relaxed and say things like using visualization, reviewing your goals, your progress that you've made, maybe listening to music. It helps as well. Your power words that we've talked about, those kinds of things are really important. So some key points for, you know, kind of a pregame routine, or it's not really a ritual, so it doesn't include superstitious kinds of actions, although some athletes think that, you know, sometimes it can help if you know, they always wear the same jersey or the same shoes or the same hat that they wore when they were doing well. And so each step of that's kind of not necessarily helpful. And sometimes if you forget your special hat or your special piece of clothing, then the problem is that the athlete can think, oh, I'm not going to do well because I forgot my hat that I always wear while I was winning. So it's better to have a pre-game routine of certain behaviors that you do that you can always do. That's not dependent on having a certain kind of clothing or special certain things that are not necessarily helpful, that aren't going to make a difference. So you've got your routine, and we talked about that in other calls as well, but we'll do we'll talk more about that. And, you know, it needs to be flexible as well, so that you can, whatever the routine is, if you're at home or you're away, you have less or more time, you can adapt it to whatever the situation is and be optimally prepared. So have it be something that you can, that the athlete can work with no matter where they are. And there's, during the pregame routine, you know, if you have like a low energy, then like fatigue or slow, you know, thinking is kind of slow or something is aching, or you have a drifting of your focus, you know, you want to be able to use these techniques to improve and get to your optimal level. So that's the key here with having a pre-game routine, is be able to use, whether it's breathing or moving, you know, quick movements. Like you see swimmers, they'll do, you know, really fast arm circles, they'll be jumping in the air right beforehand. They'll go down and splash water on their body to be able to wake up and get body ready for jumping in the water. And so you want to be able to do something that you always do. And if you have too much energy, you know, you're hyperactive or you're really have too much anxiety or worry, or you're distracted or overthinking, that's usually the case with a lot of athletes, a lot of negative thinking and tense words, or too high heart rate, then you want to be able to use these techniques, your pre-race routine, pre-game routine, to decrease your energy level to get down to where you need to be. So it's important to be aware first of what your energy level is. And then you want to be able to include three kinds of preparation for your for getting ready to get in the zone. And one is, of course, the physical preparation, you know, preparing your body and your equipment, doing your warm-up, any equipment that you need to use, you know, getting the right baseball bat if you're playing baseball, the right tennis racket, making sure you have those. And then the second thing, of course, is mental preparation. And so with all of these things, we want to make a list, too, is make sure that your athlete has this list. Sometimes they have it in their head, but it's better if it's also written down, because sometimes when we get really anxious and nervous, you know, those little details don't get taken care of. So have them make a list of all the things they need to do to prepare the body and equipment. And then with mental preparation, of course, preparing your mind. And one of the most important things is doing an MP3 custom visualization that we've talked about here that I teach you in the certification course. And you want to help them to prepare mentally. Hopefully, if you've done a series of visualizations and MP3s, then they can put those on a playlist, and so they can use those for any situation. So you can create one for high energy, one for having too low energy, bringing themselves up. You could create one for handling the pressure, for one for a specific game that they're coming up to, and so you've got and one for with power words, so that they can choose from a menu of the visualizations you have prepared for them, and so they can be able to prepare their thoughts and focus, energy level, and get the confidence high, and keep emotionally at an even keel. So the physical preparation, mental preparation. And then the third thing is a kind of a strategy or tactical preparation. So you want to prepare athletes to execute your game plan or your strategy. So and that's where you want to have them visualize different scenarios that might happen, not just the perfect game, but all the different things that might happen to overcome these tough situations. What if you know, their knee starts acting up, or what if unexpected competition shows up there, and be able to visualize that and then have a plan for handling that. So the strategy there, and depending on the sport, if it's, let's say, basketball or soccer, and oftentimes coaches will play videos of the team that they're going to be playing. They've got a video of their past games, their performances, the kind of strategy they used, and then they'll go over with you, you know, here's a weak point in the other team, here's how we can handle that. And so, you know, preparing to be able to handle yourself to meet the tough situations. So, so those are three kinds of preparation: physical, mental, and strategy preparation or tactical preparation. And then with each step, you want to write down, you know, what you're doing physically, mentally, and tactically in the days as it gets closer. So so as you get closer, the time you want to have more and more, feel more and more prepared. And so you want to visualize the night before the competition, visualize yourself performing well. The morning of, you want to review your goals for your competition and traveling there, listening to some pregame music, that kind of thing, and warming up, just being able to, the warm-up, you know, a few minutes before your game is a really important time. And so it's good to, you know, the athlete, oftentimes we don't feel that great, you know, warming up. And so that's a really important time to be able to let go of judgment and say to yourself, okay, sometimes when I warm up, and I don't feel great, I do my best workouts, and it just takes a little while to warm up. And so not judge how you're going to do based on the warm-up, but just let go of that feeling and just be able to focus on your game and feeling good, and just maybe visualizing a time when you did your absolute best. One of the best ways to do it, repeat a peak performance, is to visualize a time when you did your best performance, of course, in the past, and bring that in right now, right before you compete. So doing some deep breathing, focusing on, say, one or two points from what you want to accomplish that day, and then visualize yourself doing it really well. So some different things that these are, and then I want to talk about some specific things that you can do. But first, let me just check in with you. I know that, Michelle, you'd ask a question about your athletes and how they focus on, and how they were too focused on the other athletes' statistics. Do you want to just ask that question again so I get clear what you were asking about? Are you there, Michelle?
Yep, I'm here. Thanks, Dr. Joanne. Yeah, this is a conversation that comes up with just about every single tennis player or coach, and they'll go into their tournament knowing who they're playing in that first round, and they know the ranking or the seeding of that player, and if the player that their opponent is ranked higher than they are or ranked better than they are, many of them can feel already defeated before they even walk onto the court.
Yeah. So they kind of create a story based on what they know, the statistics and all?
Yeah. Yeah, and they feel like they don't have a chance.
Yeah. So I think it's just really, really tough when they are overanalyzing the other person. It's like, because they end up comparing and saying, here's how much of a chance I have. And, of course, yeah, and you can end up thinking, oh, this person is so much better than me, or thinking that they're not beatable. But, in fact, I think and now with, you know, phones and Google, and it's so much easier to, you know, people even create apps for everything. It's so much easier to check on these things than it used to be, that it can create almost an addiction for athletes to be overly checking their phone anyway, and now they're checking their phone for statistics about the other players, and so it can create this kind of negative addiction where they feel like they have to, how's this person doing? And so it ends up being, yeah, this kind of frenzy of difficult, thinking, kind of sizing themselves up. But what you want to do, yeah, it's a tough one. And what I would encourage, it's like any addiction, I guess, instead of saying don't do this, you need to, if we can find something else for them to do to replace that checking behavior, then that can work better. So we need to find something else that they can do, like checking their own statistics. I think, you know, find a way to go over their journal, their logbook, and look at their own progress and how much progress they've made, and just be able to focus on their own performances and their best performances, what they've had, and not have to be looking at the other the players. I know that's easier said than done, but it's something that is, if you can first emphasize the importance of not checking the other people, because first of all, they're human. I guess if you could emphasize the human factor, that everybody's human, everyone has good days and bad days, and the just like me kind of exercise, I think, can be really helpful to say this, just like me, this other player has good days and bad days, just like me, they don't, this player could win, could lose or win, and just like me, they want to, everybody's trying to do their best. You know, emphasize the human factors, that person is, you know, just like me. They have emotions, and just like me, they put on their pants shorts one leg at a time, that kind of thing, and have them write down all the ways that other person is human just like they are. So that can be a good exercise to do. And then for them to write down all the advantages that they have, to focus on themselves, you know, that athlete, and say, what advantages do I have, or what have I done that can put me, that can really help me here? And so things like, you know, if they're working with you, they can say, I have Michelle, or I have Matt, or I have Misty to work with me, my performing edge coach or sports psychology coach to help me through this. A lot of athletes don't have that advantage at all. And to look over their preparation, what kind of improvements have they made in the last few weeks or last few months. And then everybody can look at just, you know, their foundation. If they had, say, good schooling, good parents, good coaches, something that they can point to that where they've had really good mentors or some helpful mentors along the way, to be able to look at long-term what's helped them and to get to that point. And I think maybe they have a good spouse or a partner or friend that is really supportive to them, to write down all those ways that they are feeling supported by other people. And really focus on their advantages as opposed to, you know, how comparing how the other person is doing. And so kind of like, I know that those statistics are always there and we can't get rid of them, that information. It's all there, the other rankings of the other players. But what we can do is turn down the volume, I think, and turn down the put the focus somewhere else so that volume or what their rankings are is in the background. And then you could also tell stories of people, total turnaround, you know, times that they, when they were totally to win and people came around and won. Anyway, like I was working with Misty Hyman for the Olympics, and she was going, when she went to the Olympics, she wasn't expected to win at all. She was a complete underdog, and the other athletes there had, they called her Madam Butterfly because she'd been undefeated for 7 years. And no one expected that other athlete to lose, but she just had a bad day and was really nervous and no longer, you know, coming. She had peaked, but now was coming down from her peak. And so, you know, Misty went out there and just smiled and said, I'm just going to swim my best. I'm just going to have fun out here. And ended up feeling great and winning and getting the Olympic gold medal in the 200-meter butterfly. So things, if you can tell stories, there's you know, tons of stories like that, or where somebody, maybe they didn't win a gold medal, but they, you know, did a lot better than they expected. Maybe you have a story like that, or you have other athletes that have been like that, or that you can find stories like that by searching on the internet easily. And there's so many of those stories where people can do, you know, regular people do extraordinary things. So focusing on their own performance and what they can do. And I'm sure that she's had these, are they women athletes or men as well? Did you say Misty? I mean, Michelle?
They're both.
They're both? Yeah, men and women, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they can be, you know, focusing on the progress that they've made individually, and how, and to try to turn down the volume when they notice themselves checking the rankings of other people, to be able to do the just like me exercise. And that person has good days and bad days. They're fallible too. They can't. Maybe they won't I could have, you don't want to wish the other person badly, but you can wish yourself that I can have a really good day. And turn down the volume on the checking. Is that helpful, or do you have other suggestions or other things you've tried, Michelle?
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. Thanks, Dr. Joanne. And when you were talking, I had a couple of ideas to add to that. One is ask them to pay attention to how they feel when they are thinking about those rankings, like how is it impacting them in that moment? And then also ask the question, what's the cost to this? So what gets them to really reflect as to how their playing is affected when they actually focus on the results of or the rankings of their opponent? And maybe if they get really clear on how it's costing them and their performance, they might have a bit more motivation to change it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's really great. Yeah, so that's perfect. Yeah, just thinking about the, how they feel when they're thinking of the other person, you know, what it's costing them, and then how they feel when they're focused, and then have them change and try to focus on their own performance and their own progress that they've made up leading up to that time, and then think, how can I, how does that feel? And I'm sure it feels much better.
Yeah.
So compare that. Yeah, and say, okay, now it's like I put money in the bank here, or put my, putting my emotions in the bank, good emotions kind of thing. Think of it like a bank account that they're filling up their mind, their bank account with good feelings, good confidence building, and it's like that thing, you know, people talk about FOMO, or fear of missing out, or comparing with Facebook, and people are so addicted to Facebook, and they look on there and they see how everybody else is doing and the great vacations they had, and no one writes that I had a bad day or I had a bad training on Facebook. They only write the good stuff, and it's like can be like a brag fest. And so people end up feeling really bad. Studies have shown that people get into this comparing syndrome of all constantly thinking I'm not as good as this other person. They had a better a relationship, they had a better vacation, better time, a better life. And so it's the same kind of thing when you're comparing rankings. And they might end up, in addition to comparing rankings, also looking on Facebook and saying, oh, how's this person doing in their life? And saying, oh, God, they look like they have this perfect life, which is not true at all. Most people that are not in what they think their life is all over the place, up and down, but they don't talk about those things there. So it's good to, I think, be able to turn that off and realize that it is highly addictive, these websites and like Facebook pay billions of dollars to prey on our psychological vulnerabilities to get us to stay on there as long as possible, you know. And so they end up, and what people end up doing is comparing themselves to others. And studies have shown that the longer people are on social media and on their phones, and the more depressed and the more anxious they get. So younger people don't know that, those statistics, I think sometimes, or they haven't realized it. So you can bring out that information to them. And I know so many people have taken like a break from social media for a week or so, and they reported that they feel so much better. So taking a break from checking rankings, have them do an experiment. You know, they could, Michelle and anyone here, that you could do an experiment with, let's just try to say 5 days of no checking rankings, and see in a note how you feel. And just instead, give them something else to do, logging, journaling, and checking in with themselves about, just like you're checking other people's rankings, check your own ranking. Well, not rankings, but your own performances and your own feelings and your own mental progress. Instead of just looking at the numbers, which that's all ranking shows is how somebody is performing, the outside performance. What about your own internal mental performance? And that's, you could give yourself a rating on that and see if you can improve your mental ranking throughout the day. And that's something that only you can do, that no one else can really get into, that no one else can, you don't have to report that anywhere. It's very private, and they can just check in with you about that. So, give them that, maybe that concept of a kind of a mental ranking that then can translate into performance ranking as well for themselves. So, yeah, hopefully that could be some ideas, kind of, we're sort of drawing on each other's ideas here, so hopefully that helps.
Thank you, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, thanks. So, so I just wanted to give you a few other concepts here with sequence of mental preparation and what to do to get into that zone beforehand. Because you, a few weeks out, say 3 to 6 weeks out, you want to be able to be able to prepare. Each person is different, but the main objective, say 3 or 6 weeks out, this is when you really want to be working with your athletes to build confidence and mentally rehearsing their events and use the tools that we talk about in this program of visualization and concentration and be able to build on their past successes and capture those feelings of fluidity and power and, getting into a flow, getting into a zone, and really experience themselves as composed and focused, confident, and using that daily visualization. Try to have them visualize each morning before they get up, and then each night before they go to bed, simulate all the different possibilities that might occur, and be able to see. And if there is that comparing that, like Michelle, you're talking about, then being able to go back and say, be able to say this person is just like me. They're human. They have ups and downs. They want to do their best, and we're all trying to do our best. Or like in a race, I think of, rather than comparing to other people or ranking, I tell my athletes to think of it, when you're running in a race, think of it like an energy train, like all the people in front are pulling me along, all the people behind are pushing me along. So we're in this big energy train, helping each other to do our best. And so that can really help to, take that stress out of the too much competition and being able to feel like we're it's an energy train. We're because when you think about it, the best performances come from when we're challenged and when somebody is right there at our equal. And so in a lot of ways that can really get you motivated. So 3 to 6 months out, you want to really prepare yourself by building on your past successes, and then 3 days or 2 days before the event, you've done a lot of preparation, and so that's the time when you want to really have a sense of kind of contained excitement. You feel eager and under control, and you want to make this maybe just a few days before. You can't really do that much physically, but there's a lot you can do mentally, and there's a lot you can do to mess yourself up mentally by getting too anxious. So that's the time when you want to really do you tapering down physically, so that's when you want to taper up or ramp up the mental part of your training. And sometimes you could do, when you're working with athletes, they might request an extra session. You could do extra sessions with them leading up to an important competition. And so that could be really helpful there. And so make that available to them. Say we could do an extra session, of course, that you charge for. And beforehand, or if it's a local event, sometimes you could meet with them right there at the event and do a session right before the event. Or if you're at the, you know, when I went to the Olympics to work with athletes, I would meet with them, right? They would do a training session with their coach, and then I'd have a session with them right afterward to review their session and what they and go over what the good and the bad and what they want to remember, what cues their coaches gave them, and deal with any difficulties that are going on, all kinds of stresses go on at the Olympics and high-level competitions that you want to just give them a chance to vent. It's really important. So, yeah, a few days before the event, that's when you want to help them to have this really sense of contained excitement, so eager and under control, kind of like storing energy, like a battery would store energy. So when the right time comes and you give the word, you let your body explode into action, but be able to help them to have greater control of their environment, like reducing the workload of other things so you can allow yourself to really focus on the job ahead. And then the night before the event, that's when you can really the real focus begins. So take some time to do that pre-race or pre-game routine or pattern that you do beforehand. And so and get everything ready. So some things to focus on the night before the event are, you know, of course, playing your MP3 custom audio that you've prepared for them or several of them. And oftentimes, if they have a visual model, like now, of course, everyone has their phones with them, they can look up, review videos of their past performances. It's best to review your own videos of yourself doing really well. Or if they don't have that, then of a great someone that they, a role model that they really admire, and you could see them doing their event really well. What you don't want to do is watch a video of your competition, you know, doing really well and compare, you know, getting into that comparing thing, like Michelle, you were talking about. But to visually look at models, videos of yourself performing well, and then also of maybe or another top athlete that you're not competing against that you just has really good form. And then, you want that quiet time. It's really important to have put sleep in the bank. I think, you know, people wait till the night before and say, okay, I'll get, oftentimes you don't get good sleep the night before a competition because you're hyped up. So you want to get really good sleep two nights before, three nights before, you know, maybe an extra 8 or 9 hours sleep, extra sleep, so that no matter what happens the night before, you've got sleep in the bank and your immune system is strong. So you want to, if there's distractions, to be able to handle all that anxiety, you know, just be able to watch an inspirational movie or a comedy, something like that, the night before is a good thing to do, even if it's something short on YouTube, a comedy, something to make you laugh, to lighten up. You want to be able to eat really well. If you're away at a competition, then that's important to plan for. How are you going to make sure you have the right food that is something that you're used to? Check out the restaurants if you're away somewhere that that has the kind of food that you need. And then it's good to have the right clothing and have extra equipment if you need it. Like, for instance, you know, one of my athletes right before an important swim competition, her swimsuit ripped, right, in the, you know, the ready room. And so she had the, it was really important to have an extra swimsuit there to, that she could, she almost didn't make it to the final because the her clothing ripped. And so she had that, and so it made all the difference in being able to perform well. So, yeah, you want to have the right clothing and equipment there. And if you have, if it's easy, like with swim goggles, have extra goggles in case something breaks. And you want to have environment is really important. You know, people oftentimes are around people that are negative or stressful. And so, you know, you want to be around the people that make you feel good, that support you. And sometimes it's better to, if you have a competition, to be on your own as opposed to with family, because sometimes family can be really competitive, anxiety provoking. So if you have that choice, then it's okay to make the choice to be around the people that make you feel more at ease. Or if you do have to travel with stressful people, then have one good friend that you can deal with that can help you. Yeah, and have a pre-race checklist so you arrange for that travel time, and you know you've got your race number, or you know all those things, that the tactical things that you need beforehand, and to realize that nervousness is okay. So those are things that you want to do before the race. And so you want to really focus on the right energy, doing what makes you feel good to achieve to get in the zone and achieve that emotional high for the race. So, you know, you might want to encourage your athletes to call a good friend, or they could have a session with you, do a creative project, something that gets their minds off of what they're doing there. So, yeah, just being able to do what feels good to help them get into the right energy. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about what to do that morning of the event as well, and during the event to be able to create the zone of the peak performance. First, just check in with you to see if what questions you might have so far, and if you've got athletes that have trouble getting into the zone, or it could be any other questions that you might have.
Hi, Joanne.
Yeah, this is Matt.
Yeah, Matt. Just with one of my athletes, she's having trouble getting into the zone. So I guess this would be a little bit of the scenario. She is a professional basketball player. She was a power forward. She had lots of playing time. You know, she played basically the full game. Her stats are really good. Her coach ended up asking her to take over as an alternate for a point guard position because they had another power forward, or a couple more power forwards, but they didn't have sort of a second point guard. So she did that because she's versatile, and it wasn't a demotion, but it sort of ends up being in the sense that she now plays 12 minutes on average in a game instead of, you know, really triple that amount of time, and she's worried that her value as a professional athlete is going down, literally affecting her bottom line. And so she's really having trouble. And in fact, in the 7-8 years that I've worked with her, this is the first time I've ever really seen her this shaken up before, because there's actually a lot of competition in WNBA for spots, because the league's not as big, and so she's worried that with her stats going down that she would lose her her professional career over it. And so lots to worry about there. And I just ended up talking, she's a fan of Prefontaine, and so kind of read all his books and that sort of thing. And so we talked about how when Prefontaine went to run for Bowerman, how he had been told he's going to run the 5,000 meters, and he said, no, I'm a miler, and his coach said, well, you can run the mile in the meet tomorrow, but all I want to know is who you're going to run for after that. And so this is kind of a similar scenario where the coach is telling her, this is what I want you to do. And in Prefontaine's case, of course, he found that he had a higher skill set for the 5,000. And it was a good thing for him, happening for him at the time, but just didn't realize at the time that it was the right thing. So we kind of talked about how long term she could look at this as an opportunity to show how versatile she is. And then I just had her kind of going out for some walks in the morning where one of your exercises that I took was just paying attention to her senses and appreciating the morning air, focusing on her breathing, just calming herself down and thinking about how she's going to make it a positive day before she shows up for practice or competition, so she has a better attitude about it when she comes in, because we both agreed that her attitude is starting to, you know, be a little bit more noticeable to herself, of course, and her coaches and her teammates. And she's not a negative person, but she's just struggling. And so I didn't know if maybe there's some bit of advice there that you might give that I haven't given yet.
Yeah, that's a tough one when somebody gets changes positions and feels like they're getting a demotion. Yeah, so frustrating when you're playing the whole game and then you're only playing now with this new position. She's only playing a third of the time. And so your mind goes through all these changes. She may, end up, I guess one thing is gratefulness, to be grateful that she has this opportunity to stay on the team. You know, some players get cut completely. This is professional basketball then that she's playing?
Yeah, it's for the Chicago Sky.
Yeah, it's great. And so she's getting paid, sounds like, which is a wonderful thing to actually, as a female athlete, have such a hard time getting paid decently. And so just to be grateful that she is able to be on the team and you know, getting paid for that. To learn about that new position, being point guard. Sometimes you have to learn new things to be able to just stay in that position. So to be able to be the best point guard she can be, think of it as like being a specialist in that area, and find, you know, she could do more training outside of the game to. To be an even better point guard, I know it's good for her to just be able to vent to you and to talk with you about the frustration she feels as well. It's good I think for you as a coach to be able to acknowledge and to not just say, oh, well, just keep your chin up and keep moving forward, but to first acknowledge her feelings. That's totally human and totally natural to feel let down and feel frustrated getting changed to this other position. And so to acknowledge that and let her kind of scream and yell if she needs to about the frustrations there at first, and then maybe some ongoing to just get those feelings out. But also balance that with being grateful that she is on the team at all, because it's, thinking about, visualize millions of women that would love to be in her position, to be on a professional basketball team. As soon as we forget about that part, when we get a kind of demotion, to realize even though it's a little bit of a demotion, it's only a tiny change compared to, the millions of people that would climbing the ladder to get where she is. So kind of putting that in perspective. And then, being able to I wonder if it's a possibility if she works hard as a point guard that she could go back to being, what was she before, a forward?
Yeah, she was a power forward.
Uh-huh.
And she actually came off of her best season, but she plays as an international athlete, so she played for Spain and they won the international championships, and she was named athlete of the international championship games, and so she felt like she had proven her worth, and I think it just really was a blow to her because she, after having such a good season internationally, I think she thought that she was more valuable than ever in her position, and I just don't think she was prepared for it.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to get, after she got that honor and did so well, to get demoted. And I guess sometimes it depends on what her relationship is with the coach. Sometimes if you could talk with a coach to try to understand why is this change being made. Sometimes athletes need, coaches make bad decisions, and the athletes need to speak up for themselves and say, here's what I've been doing, here's what I'm doing to get better, here are my statistics, and to be, it's kind of like in any job, you have to do a good job and you have to show that you're doing a good job and communicate that. So if there's a way that she could speak to the coach and say, what do I need to do to get better, to get that, to be able to play forward again, a power forward, if that's a possibility, or was there just to say, I'd like to understand the reason why I was changed to point guard. Sometimes athletes just accept that, and not knowing the reason and thinking this is just not fair is can be really frustrating. And so if she could ask the coach in a non-confrontive way, but just say, I'd like to understand the reason for this change.
Just real quick, I mean, we discussed that, so she did. She talked to her coach, and he gave her a backhanded kind of compliment because he said, look, you're a great power forward. I don't have a second great point guard, and you're so versatile. I know that you can become that for me. So it's more just about sacrifice for the team, and that's why he wants her to do it, not because she's not a good enough power forward, but just because he doesn't have enough stacked in the point guard department.
I see, yeah. So if she can take it to understand that it's for the team and it's not, to not take it personally, that's good that she understands that reason, yeah. And maybe they'll get another point guard, or, she could check in with the coach to see if another point guard is coming or available or something. And she could ask, what do I need to do to get to be the power forward again? Things just to have that, hold that thought that things can change.
Right.
So, and that it's, whenever it's a difficult situation, I think if you can say to yourself, this is temporary, that can be a good thing. And that this is, and things happen for a reason, this will help me, and ask her to make a list of how this can help me. What can I learn from being a point guard here? And she's probably thinking this is nothing compared to what I was doing, but there's probably things a lot you can learn from being a point guard, and who knows, she might end up being a coach someday, and being able to learn all the positions is an important thing. So seeing a bird's eye view, it's always helpful to see things from another person's perspective, so see things from the coach's perspective, and that it's not a personal demotion on for her. It's not personal, but it's something that the the coach needed to do for the team, and so that makes sense, kind of thing. Yeah. So yeah, I hope that helps. And so
thanks
for that. That's great. And so yeah, that's a really important one to be able to move forward with changes that happen like that. So I know we're getting toward the end of our time here, and so I just wanted to check in with everyone about maybe a nugget or something that you could take away from this call today, what you learned, and then we'll have our next call, let's see, the second and fourth Thursday, so the next one will be July the 25th. Coming up, you can mark your calendars for that, and then we can go over more of information about getting in the zone, what to do during the morning of the game and during the competition itself, and what happens if things throw you off and you get out of the zone, how to get back in the zone. Those kinds of things would be really important as well. So, yeah. Misty, are you still there? Or Michelle? In terms of a nugget or some kind of takeaway that was helpful for you?
Oh, hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Michelle here.
Yeah.
I found it really helpful. Thank you. I really appreciate you answering my question. And the comment you said about Facebook preying on our psychological vulnerabilities, that seemed to strike a chord with me.
Yeah.
And just getting into the zone. I think of getting into the zone as absence of thought, you know, where just your mind is quiet and you're just doing. But I have to remind myself that that really only applies to people who have really mastered their sport, I guess, when they don't have to think about mechanics as much. Like some of the junior athletes, they can't do that just yet, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So but you can maybe get into a mini zone.
mini zone, exactly.
start to experience that, moments of feeling good kind of thing. It doesn't have to be, like this gold medal winning performance, but it could be a mini zone of just feeling good and feeling like, I learned something today, or I gained this new skill. I can figure this out. So we can work on that with athletes that are just getting started kind of thing. So
mini zone.
Yeah. I just thought of that.
Dr. Joanne,
yeah. Yes.
At some point, would you be able to, maybe in our next session, talk about team synergy?
Oh, yeah, right. Thank you for your question. Yeah. So let's talk about that next time. And in the meantime, I can get I can send you a few information too on that. But yeah, team synergy is a really great topic. Yeah. So let's talk about that. I know that was your second question there. And
it's a big one.
Yeah, good one. I think, just little things like the whole, like the volleyball teams coming together and giving a group high five, a group fist bump is they have this kind of physical contact is just one little suggestion for team synergy, or saying, the old 2-4-6-8, who do we appreciate? being able to do a little chant is a good thing. Going out to pizza afterwards or dinner, all kinds of, there's a lot more we can talk about with that. So that would be great, yeah. Okay, that sounds good, thanks. Yeah, and with the Facebook preying on our psychological vulnerabilities, there's one guy that wrote a book called The Attention Merchants, and so you can look that up to read more about it. But kind of use our attention as a commodity, and are buying our attention through these things, getting us to check, always be checking. So we want to be able to be checking within ourselves, not just falling prey to this company and what they want us to do. So great, thank you. And Misty, are you there? Still there too? I heard a beep. Yeah, she might have had to leave for another call. So that's good. So thank you, everyone, for coming. It's always such a, I love these conversations. It's just so great. We're like a think tank here. And it's great to chat with you all. And let's talk again. You know, we'll talk about the team synergy as a topic. That's great. You can always offer me topics too on July the 25th. So I'll have this recording up shortly. And thank you, Matt and Michelle and Misty and all the others. And also congratulations to Paul in England for his for your winning the championships, the European championships with freestyle jet skiing there and using our performing edge techniques here. That's great. And so we can talk more about that next time. Okay, thank you, everyone. Was
thank
that
you.
Paul? Okay, I don't think so. Okay, thank you, everyone. We'll talk to you next time on the 25th. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dr. John. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.